This is Eco Radio KC, a locally produced exploration of positive solutions to the ecological challenges we face as we work to create a healthier future for our community and the planet.
Good evening, and thank you for tuning into Eco Radio. On tonight's program, the Sierra Club's Zach Pastora regales us with tales of his recent wilderness trip, as well as the latest in environmental issues in Kansas. But first, I'm Natural E with your headline news. WashingtonPost.com reports, President Trump has put America at odds with the rest of the world, literally, when it comes to the goal of combating climate change. At an international climate conference in Bonn last Tuesday, Syria announced its plans to join the Paris Climate Accord, an agreement forged in 2015 for nations to band together to slash global carbon emissions. That now leaves the United States as the only country to disavow the deal after Trump this year announced intentions to withdraw from the agreement. The move comes after the only other holdout, Nicaragua, announced plans to join the Paris Agreement in September. Nicaragua initially had refused to join the agreement in 2015 because its leaders felt the accord did not go far enough in compelling nations to reduce their carbon emissions. But in joining the deal this fall, the country's president noted that it is the, quote, only instrument we have, end quote, to unite the world around the goal of staving off the most catastrophic effects of global warming. LJWorld.com reports the state of Kansas has authorized the city of Lawrence to release millions of gallons of nitrogen-contaminated water from the former farmland fertilizer plant into the Kansas River from now until April 1st, according to Tom Stiles, assistant director of the KDHD Bureau of Water. Nitrogen can be harmful, but the KDHE officials said they don't expect any impact because the nitrogen will be heavily polluted. Quote, we've conditioned this discharge so that the river really assimilates the nitrogen load quickly and disperses it, and we don't anticipate any significant change in noticeable conditions going downstream as we head down the river towards the Johnson County area, end quote, said Stiles. Too much nitrogen in the water, a form of nutrient pollution, can cause large algae blooms that harm water quality in habitats and decrease the oxygen that fish and other aquatic animals need to survive, according to the EPA. Nitrates in drinking water can be harmful to humans, especially infants. ENN.com reports, after 3 years of flat growth, global fossil fuel emissions are rising again. According to a series of reports from the Global Carbon Project, a group chaired by Stanford scientist Rob Jackson, the report forecasts that global fossil fuel emissions will reach a record 37 billion tons of carbon dioxide in 2017, with total emissions reaching a record 41 billion tons, including deforestation. Atmospheric carbon dioxide concentration reached 403 parts per million in 2016 and is expected to increase by 2.5 parts per million in 2017. And finally, e360.yale.edu reports that China and India are the world's two biggest coal-burning nations, but the University of Maryland study showed that a host of measures implemented by China over the past decade, including improved pollution control technologies and levying fines on polluters, have sharply cut sulfur dioxide emissions. These reductions were achieved even as coal usage increased 50% in China and electricity generation grew 100%. India, by contrast, has seen sulfur dioxide emissions soar as the country has built new coal-fired power plants but has not imposed significant pollution controls. The study published in the journal Scientific Reports says India may already have become the world's largest emitter of sulfur dioxide. Despite China's progress in slashing SO2 emissions, which cause acid rain, haze, and numerous health problems, the country still has a severe air pollution problem because SO2 makes up only 10-20% of particulate air pollution, the study said. Not until other sources of pollution from vehicles, factories, and agriculture are cleaned up will China's air become significantly cleaner, the study said.
Thank you, Naturally. This is Richard Mabian, for those of you who don't know me, and welcome to Eco Radio. And I want to give a big shout out to our listeners. First of all, I'm on vacation. I officially went on vacation yesterday morning, and even though I have work to do all week, I'm doing it from a vacation state of mind. I used to always take the month of November to reflect on what went on this past year, and I'm just going to tell all of you out there, it's been one hell of a year. Environmentally, politically, emotionally, it's been one heck of a year. The only thing that's been consistent in my life are my associates and my friends. They have remained consistent, and the people who I work with, we have accomplished a lot this year in ways that many of you have not, haven't seen yet, but eventually, hopefully, will become a factor in your life too. So I'm telling you all right now, happy Thanksgiving, because I'm going to get up out of here Saturday and won't be back for a week. But I'm in a great mood, and I just suffered a major loss with my environmental work in Kansas City, Kansas. You know, we lost our mayor, and not that that means that the work we're doing will have any kind of setback or anything. It's just that when you spend 4 years associating with someone that's in charge, then to no longer have that person when it wasn't expected kind of puts a damper on you. It takes you a minute or two to kind of, it's like getting hit with a sidewinder, you know. You're still, everybody I know is still trying, is still getting up. But we're here. Our show tonight for you is going to be a good one. I got my guy, Zach. Say hello, Zach.
Hey, everyone.
He's here on the show. This is between him and Mike, and naturally, those are my most consistent things in life. Zach is good to go. If I give him a holler, regardless of what's going on, he's going to make contact, and he's going to come in. And Zach does a lot for keeping us in touch with what's going on in reality with the environmental world that we live in, especially in the state of Kansas. And I'm always impressed and amazed at the people who I meet out there, and I know some of you are listening as I speak, and I just want you to know I appreciate knowing that you follow us and that you listen to us and that you have really good things to say about this show. I'm going to throw out the number as usual, whether you call or not. I always want it to be in your hand. You never know what's going on. 816-931-5534. 816-931-5534. So here's what we're going to do. As Naturally said, I got Zach on here because, you know, Zach takes he's like he's like an old school kind of person back in the Davy Crockett days. Just take off and go out into the wild blue yonder by himself. No cell phone, just all over the daggum planet. He's been places and just be isolated and come back with tales and experiences that every year I have to have him on here so he can tell us about it. So I'll get him on here in a second with that. I was trying to find him for something. I think it was to be on the show or something. Oh, yeah, to tell us about this little paper he's going to tell us about here in a second. And I couldn't get him, and then I got a call back, and he was on one of them wilderness trips. So I told him when he got back in town, we had to have him on here so he could tell us about it. But first, we're going to deal with this paper. Kind of explain to us what this is about, Zach.
Sure. Richard, as always, thanks for having me. Always great to be on EQ Radio here at KKFI. Really appreciate it and always honored to be with you. Wanted to say before I begin, happy belated Veterans Day.
Oh, thank you.
To you and all the other people who put their lives on the line for the service to the country. I got a buddy who's actually with the Kansas Guard going down to Puerto Rico to help with the rebuild of the island after the hurricane. And all the folks listening here, a different kind of service, commitment to our environment often goes uncredited. So appreciate all that, the people in service and the people helping out the planet and making it a better place. I got some ideas for you on your holiday if you're interested in going out to the wilderness.
No, you ain't getting me out in the wide blue yonder. I'm a city boy.
Well, hey, at least you won't get poison ivy like I did coming back from my...
Did you get poison ivy?
I did. Man. And got to the point where I got an infection from the poison ivy. So it was a serious thing. I had no idea. But I gotten poison ivy before, and so I just thought it was one of those things. But turned out to get infected, and it was a serious deal. So be mindful. Know your plants out there, even your poisonous ones. So it was a great time. But before I talk about a little bit of that trip, I'd be happy to talk about one issue we're facing in the state of Kansas, for those that don't know, my occupation is for the first half of the year is a lobbyist for the Kansas Sierra Club at the state level for Kansas. Yeah, I'm working in Topeka. I was just there today talking to a special committee on natural resources on water funding. So that was an interesting discussion. We can talk a little bit about that. But one of the issues we've been wrestling with for the last 3 years is the issue of noxious weeds. You know what noxious weeds are?
Explain that.
Yeah. Basically, weeds are unwanted plants. Noxious weeds are the point where they become a threat to either humans or livestock or the natural world. They invade, and there's nothing to get rid of. A good example is a zebra mussel.
Okay.
You know, now our lakes that didn't ever have zebra mussels now.
Right.
And then just, you know, they can cause problems to the swimmers and people enjoying the recreational aspects of the lake to the whole natural ecosystem. They don't have any predators. They crowd out things. Next thing you know, the balance of the ecosystem's out of whack.
Okay.
So, for example, there's a plant in Kansas called Serratia lespidiza. And at one point, it was brought in to help with cattle with grazing, but now it's the point it's out of control.
Okay, now
we can't
when you say
it
was brought in to help with cattle with grazing, so cattle eat it?
Cattle can eat it.
Okay, all right.
But the point where it's not their preferred food, and then it's spreaded so fast, it's getting rid of natural ecosystems like the prairie.
Wow.
So there's an environmental threat from these invasive plants, these noxious weeds. But one issue that I'm bringing up to the conversation here is, how do we deal with some of these noxious weeds? We go out and spray them with pesticides, essentially poisons we're putting on the land to control a different environmental threat, but in doing so is making one of our own. Okay, now see what you think about that. But what we're looking at is each year in Kansas, we're estimated about 19 million pounds of glyphosate Roundup put on the land. Not all that's to control weeds. It's for crops, cropland to control their weeds too, not just in pastures. But, you know, when the World Health Organization in 2015 comes out and say this is a probable carcinogen,
yeah,
and the state of California agrees, we're looking at millions of pounds of probable carcinogen put onto our land.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's an issue, not just for human health reasons, but those indicators in the natural world that we don't always, by the time it affects us up the upper food chain, if you will, we don't realize exactly how harmful it is. We talk about butterflies, pollinators, bees. You know?
I cat caught you saying on the thing in the water in the lakes.
The zebra mussels.
When they first talked about that, they didn't say it had a problem with humans, but you said it involves the recreation of people too.
Oh yeah, oh absolutely, yeah. You step out, you're trying to go for a swim, and step on the land, and it's full of mussels. You know, those are sharp edges on those shells. And yeah, you can get your feet cut off. But
yeah.
The issue goes further than that. If we're talking about other species,
right,
or even plant species like a blue-green algae, you might have remembered me talking about the blue-green algae issue. We have a problem with fertilizers rotting off the land into our streams, into our reservoirs, and now we're getting a growth of this toxic algae. Well, on 4th of July, it's shutting down a popular lake. So people are going to go to the lake and celebrate the holiday. Next thing you know, they're not allowed to get in it. The bait shop down the street can't sell any bait because people don't want to fish in something that, you know, is going to cause problems, either themselves, animals, or certainly the fish inside of there. So.
I'm just that's why I needed vacation, y'all. Yeah. I'm serious. You know, I've been nose to the grindstone on this environmental stuff since about 2005, 2006, you know. And when you sit here and tell me that, I mean, I just didn't say anything about the releasing the contaminants in the water.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, we we have our hands full, and I just don't know what the end results are going to be, because when you work your butt off to bring it to the attention of people, those same people turn around and say, "Oh, that's okay. Go ahead. You can let that water out. I'm sure by the time it gets to Johnson County, it won't be a problem." I don't think it's going to be a problem. We got to kill the weeds. So what are we going to get? Pesticide.
Yeah.
I mean, the number one thing that everybody's been told for years to leave alone, don't use Roundup around your house, y'all.
Right.
That's dangerous.
That's a good point.
But we out there spraying the weeds with Roundup, and the people who regulate this say, "Oh, it's okay."
Yeah. Well, and I mean, hey, to some extent, if there's certain ways to use it, if there's certain responsibilities to take on any issue, we can try to control it to the best we can. But it might not be solving the whole problem. It might not harm human health in Johnson County downriver, okay, of Lawrence, to your point. But it's not going to help the dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico that's the size of New Jersey now.
Yeah.
You know, where nothing can live there because it's been over-fertilized to the point where the oxygen has been depleted. It's just amazing.
Can I jump in? I pulled up the article from the Journal World. This is Mike. So it says, too much nitrogen in the water, a form of nutrient pollution, can cause large algae blooms that harm water quality and habitats and decrease the oxygen that fish and other aquatic animals need to survive. This is according to the EPA. Nitrates in drinking water can be harmful to humans, especially infants. I can go on. But
that's one of the circumstances for releasing contaminated water, right?
So here's the story. So the city owns this former farmland property in Lawrence. And they're legally responsible for remediating this decades of nitrogen fertilizer spills that contaminated the groundwater. The original plan to dispense the water is no longer sufficient, and storage tanks are at capacity. So they're maxed out. They got to do something. And so, I have not read the whole article, but according to the headline, it was authorized by the state, which I'm assuming means KDHE. Right. Yeah.
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
did it have to be approved by legislators or anything?
No, that is a state agency can make that decision. So, and that's why it's important to have legislative oversight on some of these issues.
Right.
If folks come up to, you know, their legislators and say, "Hey, we're concerned about this nitrate issue, concerned for our children being susceptible to risk," then that could be a process for changing the rules down the road.
Well, you know, the reason that it really just bugs the hell out of me, the guy that was just here, Tim Morrison, if you're listening out there, Tim, really did enjoy meeting you. And he was identifying with me as far as combining social justice with the environmental world. And, you know, when you I want folks to understand how it feels to be black in America, for those of you who are not a person of color. You know, like yesterday we had three people get killed at 10 o'clock in the afternoon. You know, boom, dead. One of the girls called in and said we've been shot and she dies. 10 o'clock, that's not counting the four or five others around them. And then when you hear people addressing the issue, they saying stuff like, "Well, I just think you need to talk to your family, friends, and tell them to find other ways to deal with the angers." And I mean, these are the police. People are lost on what to do with that problem. And when you have families and relatives and people who live in those communities, I still live in the city. When I go home tonight, I got to get out of my car and go in the house. When my wife comes home, she got to get out of the car and come in the house. It makes you worry and be concerned about that. But the reason I'm saying that, it's that same thing now happening with the rest of the world with this environmental issue. I mean, you're going to have to start being concerned about it because you're in a position now where people are making decisions that seem like the contrary to what would be the benefit of your health and your family's health. We talk about Flint.
Right.
We talk about Flint, and then we turn around here and releasing contaminated water into the river that's going to flow from Lawrence to wherever.
Down the Mississippi.
Right? Down the Mississippi.
Yeah, it's going to reach the Missouri River right there at
Call Point.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Then
I mean, it's not too much different than what we heard in the news about the fossil fuels emission going up.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we're having significant climate disasters, okay, at the point where, you know, hurricanes are causing people to die. Wildfires are causing people to die. And we don't equate with what is seen as a political issue where the White House won't talk about climate change. And then the next thing you know, we got Americans, people across the world suffering from
some consequences. But is that somewhere we got a caller?
We've got Elaine on the line.
Oh, okay.
Elaine, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Elaine from Sierra Club, and I've been looking into this discharge of the nitrates from the farmland remediation project, and have a little more information. It sounds like that the city of Lawrence is kind of laying the decision made on KDHE, and KDHE is pointing the finger at the city of Lawrence, but there's no paper trail here. We've not seen the evidence that there's not going to be an increase in the load of nitrates to the river as a result of this. And the whole Clean Water Act and the enforcement of it is based on data. None of that has been shared with the public or with other downstream utilities who use that water for drinking water. The real issue here is transparency, and we're not too surprised because the Kansas City Star just had a front page article on secrecy in the Kansas government. And this is part of it, where a city that was already prepared to pay to truck this material and dispose of it properly, suddenly, without any record in the city documents, decides it's going to dump it straight into the river without treatment. And that is just unacceptable.
Oh, that's ridiculous. I mean,
we have a problem. I mean, it has been alluded that this stuff does get down to the Gulf and can create a dead zone. But here in Kansas, as Zach had mentioned, we already have nitrogen problems in many of our rivers and lakes. The algal growth here, the toxic algal growth, is a problem. We need to deal with this at home. The state, in around 2010, actually embarked on a nutrient reduction strategy. You know, this makes no sense.
None.
To dump this into the river.
Well, you know, I was telling Zach before we went on, Elaine, that it really makes the need to educate the public, oh, man, just so much a front burner issue, because we can't depend on our regulatory services. I'm just sorry. I mean, right now, we're probably the only place in town talking about this.
Well, and there is a need. I mean, what I'm hearing is that the individuals in Lawrence, like the city manager, the mayor, the council people, have not heard a word from the citizens of Lawrence.
There it is.
And we need to make sure that not only the citizens of Lawrence, you know, contact their elected officials, but that those of us who live downstream need to be speaking up as well. So if the listeners want to take action, I mean, get on, Google Lawrence, City of Lawrence, find out how to contact the elected officials there who made this decision, or at least who are going along with the decision that's been proposed by KDHE, and object to it. Make noise, because what they're saying is no one said a peep.
That's
so we're going to get the message out. You know, Sierra Club's going to start working on this and get our members, you know, to call up. Let's object to it. And it may be that there is no significant change in the loading, but we need proof of that.
Right.
We need this to be transparent, and they owe us that.
Elaine, this is Mike. So I'm looking at this Journal World article. And they're saying, an alternative to trucking, city manager Tom Marcus told the city commission about the discharge authorization this week. He said that being able to release the nitrogen water into the river provides relief for the city in several ways. Marcus said hauling water by truck would have negatively affected the environment, area infrastructure, and the city's budget. water is heavy and it's expensive to move, and it's millions of gallons of water need to be transported away from the site, he said. When asked why KDHA would authorize release into the river when the city was planning to truck the water, Stiles said the monitored discharge of the nitrogen water is safer than the city's trucking plan.
Well, let's address the issue of the safety of trucking. When they permitted, and KDHE had permits on that too, the Gardner-Edgerton intermodal facility, no one talked about the danger of putting more semis with containers on our highways.
Right.
There are literally tens of thousands coming out of there every year right now. So let's not talk about safety of trucks as an issue here. If there is danger of overloading the river with nitrates as a result of this discharge, then there is a process under the Clean Water Act to do what's called an alternatives analysis. And you look at alternatives, you look at the cost that is taken into consideration, you know, the social impacts, that's part of the law. But you also look at the environmental impacts, and there are on-site treatment methods out there that would require neither piping it all under the river to the north side farm or putting it in trucks or discharging it. And that's why the law provides that alternative analysis. It's to look at all the options and to choose the one that makes the most sense, and I don't believe this is it.
Oh, wow. Well, I'm so glad you called. I'm glad you sat there listening.
You bet I listen all the time.
Yes, ma'am. I appreciate you. I'm on my way down your way part of town here Saturday. I'm not going to be able to make our meeting. I got my schedules all screwed up. But
I would just tell your listeners, if they are worried about this, make some noise.
That's it.
Because they don't have to have the solutions. They just need to ask questions about this and ask for transparency. Bottom line.
Okay. Will do.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Right.
Thanks, Lane.
Yeah, we got to take a break here. That's perfect timing. I'm going to give out the number before we go, just in case you'd like to call back in. That's 816-931-5534. 816-931-5534.
Glenn Greenwald.
It's extremely easy to get people to see why things like healthcare for their children or a job that lets them feed themselves and their family are important. That's just materially self-evident. You don't need to convince anybody of that. Things like privacy and due process and civil liberties tend to be more abstract and more ethereal, a little bit more distant, and therefore slightly more elusive in terms of their importance and the reasons why it's so imperative that we safeguard them.
Wednesday, 9 a.m.
What's that sound, you ask? It's the sound of one-time-use trash. People get bottled water because of hydration, convenience, and the claim of better taste and quality. Truth is, there's usually no difference between bottled and tap water. The healthier choice is to get a cool, reusable bottle made of lined aluminum, steel, glass, or special plastic that won't break off chemical bits like the plastic used in disposable bottles. Get healthy and keep your world from becoming a big junk pile. Disposables dead. Brought to you by J.C. Herman High School and 90.1 FM KKFI.
A fish called Cisco. On this current cast. Until the 60s, schools of slender, silvery Cisco swam the Great Lakes, feeding on zooplankton and dodging predators. Fishermen called them lake herring.
They were one of the most abundant species across the Great Lakes, and at one time they comprised the largest commercial fishery in the Great Lakes.
Ellen George is a graduate research assistant in the Cornell Department of Natural Resources. She says overfishing, invasive species, and pollution caused Cisco populations to plummet. Today they're making a comeback, and George hopes a new generation will discover
these fish are fun and tasty and good things to catch as well.
Current Cast is produced in partnership with Cornell University's Atkinson Center for a Sustainable Future. Learn more online at currentcast.org.
All right, I'm back again, and that number again is 816-931-5534, 816-931-5534. As Elaine said, what we need to do here is make a little noise. You could all figure out, all of you out there are sharp and bright enough to understand how to get in touch with your city government in Lawrence, and just ask them questions. Have them to provide you with some kind of documentation or something about what was involved with them making that decision and the whole bit. I mean, boy, I'm sure glad I'm on vacation. Let's just wear you out some more. I was going to have a good time sitting here with Zach. Now y'all got me going, dang, man. I mean, what's going on? What's this country?
We're still having a good time.
Having a good time. Having a good time. Yeah, I'll take that back. It's good hearing from Elaine. But again, for you all out there listening, understand, that's what KKFI provides. You know, when we have our fun drives and stuff, that's one of the things we talk about. This is the only station in town that you'll probably hear that conversation you just heard about a situation that should be all of our concern. All of our concern. That's just unreal. All right, Zach, we got two things we're going to do. Zach wants to talk a little bit about legislation. You can't get him in here without him saying something about the legislature. So he's pushing my wilderness conversation back. So I'm going to give you 5 minutes on your legislator. Tell me about it.
Okay. You want to go into legislative first?
Yeah, let's get that.
Okay,
out of the way.
Okay.
I'm gonna end on.
Hey, I'm excited about that. Maybe it's just because I got done with my own vacation and rearing to go. But I'm really excited about this legislative session. You know, it's the year before election year, so you know, for some, you think that might slow down, get quiet, because no one wants to make any big moves before election season. Campaign, you want to promise all the stuff you can do, you know, and then deliver on it. Well, for a third of the Kansas legislature, they're brand new, they're first timers, so this is the end of their kind of first time, so to say. And so, what are they going to have to prove? What do they have already on their record? That's a good question. So in my mind, I think, you know, aside, set the stage last year, it was all about school funding, getting the tax situation right, getting Kansas back on track. This year, it came down from the Supreme Court of Kansas that we will have to think about school finance again, potentially rewrite the formula. But for me, we got the kind of tax situation kind of figured out. That could be open for more debate. But in my mind, there's a lot of pressing environmental issues that have been getting a lot of discussion for years now.
Yeah.
And that we're about due for some action. And I think for these first-time legislators, whether it's increasing funding for the state water plan, whether it's doing something about this noxious weed issue and pesticide issue in Kansas, doing something about potentially the earthquakes in Kansas, or even climate change. There's a lot to be tackled, and environmental issues are becoming more important all the time, increasingly important. So I hope that we can get some action done this session.
Well, you might be a lot more optimistic than I am. I'll just say that I'm really becoming very pessimistic about what the decisions may be, because I'm sitting up looking at the regulatory agencies having the ability to make a decision without going through the legislators.
Right. That's true. And that happens a lot.
Yeah.
But at some point, there's unhappiness with the current agencies and their action or lack of action that demands change. So, for example, the point about whether the agency is allowing 30 million gallons of nitrogen-filled fluid to go downstream, that might cause some outcry, just like some folks have outcried about the issue of Kansas having earthquakes now, when we never had them before. So the pressure on the executive agencies, either through the legislature or just citizens, gain more momentum on the issue, will help change that down the road. The other thing I was going to say is that a couple things have changed in the Kansas politics that have changed. We had the biggest swing politically for Democrats last election. We have a majority of moderate politicians now in Kansas, both being Democrats and Republicans. So that's changed. We had the rise of the Women's Caucus across the state. Some group of legislators came together, both women and men, but primarily led by women, said, hey, we want to come up with answers now and solutions, as opposed to putting the issue off or squabbling. And then the other thing, the other game changer that I think a lot of people can relate with was last year about this time, election of a new president. Now folks are saying we got to kind of take this at the community level, the grassroots level, because we cannot depend on government as much as what we thought, right? We got to take it in our own hands. We have the opportunity to control our own actions in every day and our community's actions if we organize. We're not going to get as much help from the federal government for environmental protection.
Right.
So what that's meaning at the state level is, I heard it today in the special committee, we're going to have to dedicate more state resources to this sort of work because they're going to cut the federal budget.
So now, does that mean that they may be putting more emphasis in helping us do some education in our urban communities?
I absolutely think that would be a big part of it.
That's a big part.
I mean, rural and urban communities both need education. Education is going to be the key problem solver.
Well, see, my issue with it is that many of you have some knowledge in your rural communities. They may not have the support and the numbers, but you do have some knowledge in your rural communities. We are still clueless in our urban communities. I mean, it's not an issue. We're beating up each other.
Yeah, I would agree with you, but I also think about urban agriculture. We got, you know, farmers markets and things happen in the urban community. We don't necessarily see in the rural community on some issues.
In some issues. Now, I agree with you. I saw they're getting ready to do something out there in Merriam at their farmers market. They're getting ready to invest some money into it. I think that's great. But see, I think it's individuals. You know, it's individuals. We got to. But still, I was talking to someone about transportation when we went to the Dorothy's Nam celebration, the CEP celebration. And I was telling her that, you know, it really hadn't dawned on me, but, you know, the low-income community is so, they're such bad shape that if a person, they can't afford ambulance. So for them, if they have some kind of sickness that's really serious, they have to waddle, and I do mean waddle, to a bus stop to get a bus to take you to KU Med Center. I mean, that's
a shame.
You know, and I just don't hear that conversation or that solution you're talking about. This is a whole different ballgame. Someone was telling me, look how great the transportation we've improved. And we have. I'm not saying you haven't. But it's still a long walk from a house in a neighborhood to a bus stop. And you got an aging population, and that population is definitely aging. I don't see anyone that's looking at how do we get person from point A to point B and those kind of things. So I'm hoping that someone will pay attention to that. That's all I'm saying. I think if you pay it, just like me saying it now, if somebody would pay attention to it, you can't help but see that this is bad. You know, what is it, though? But then we can maybe start having the conversation. I don't think I need to have an answer. People, when they hear those kind of things, they expect you to have an answer. Well, what do you think? I think we need to get it on the table and all of us get around that table and kind of work with each other doing some brainstorming. We have the capability of getting it done, but we need to come together and take the pressure off a person like me that's out here every day discovering these issues to be the one to tell you what it is we're supposed to do to turn it around.
Yeah.
Let's come together and
talk
about it.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
I absolutely agree that it takes cooperation
and
partnership. And I think it's starting to come to light that, you know, the political system as is, you know, my way or the highway.
Right.
You're either with us or against us. I think that's going by the wayside of realizing that people need to solve the problems, that we expect a better level of society for all sorts of issues. And the only way we're going to do that is rolling up our sleeves, like I said, connecting, educating with people, and realizing that we have a future together.
Right.
Let's have a better future together.
Right. I agree 100%. All right. Anything else you want to share?
You know, I could go on for a long time about this.
That's all right.
I just encourage your folks that are listening for the first time or every time to get involved somehow. either that self-education and kind of doing your own homework on what the issues are, what's important to you, but also broadcasting that to our elected representatives.
Right.
You know, well, you're going to go to the new mayor,
right,
and you're going to say, hey, this is what I have to offer. Here are my thoughts on
things.
Yeah,
here's where we're going. Right. If they continue to listen to the station, we're going to start promoting that here. I'm going to promote it every time I'm on for people to really get more actively involved in what's going on in their communities. You're going to have to because of what's going on. Come on, man. I'm down to little time left. Come on, talk to me. Talk to me. I mean, I just want y'all to know, I told you I was trying to get him, and he called me up when he saw that I was trying to get him. He came to civilization and gave me a call to let me know. I said, I figured you was out. He said, yeah, he was out in the deep somewhere. And he kept saying something like I was so far in there, Richard, that I looked around and I realized that, you know, there's bears around. And he's out there in the middle of it. No phone, no nothing.
It's always good to be coming back to society and realize the good things. I want to say that the Sierra Club, been around since 1892, our mission is to explore, enjoy, and protect the environment. And explore and enjoy are big parts of that. And so, you know, for me, I enjoy getting out in the wilderness. It's a therapeutic thing. It kind of lets me reset from, some of the social issues I deal with a lot with people. And so to get away, it's a sanctuary of sorts. And, you know, I ask legislators this. I say, hey, what's the most beautiful place you've been to? I get a little time to think about it. And usually it's somewhere outside. Yeah. You know, say, it's on my family's pond, you know, when I'm fishing. Or, oh, it's up in the mountains. The sunset was absolutely amazing. Why is it that natural place propels such a beauty? It's just an aesthetic that inspires us, you know, artists.
Yeah.
So, anyway, for me, it was getting away. Great exercise, going hiking. I was a little nervous about the bears. When you're on the beach, okay, just set the stage. I was visiting an old friend and just moved to California. And, I can make a lot of jokes about lobbying for the environment in California versus Kansas, but I'll hold those. Yeah. But I was up there. It's called the Lost Coast Trail, and it's the westernmost part of California where it kind of bends and goes up north to Oregon and Washington.
Okay,
so Northern California, redwoods.
Okay.
You know, have you seen the redwoods? A magical thing. Those things are huge, you know, bigger than what can fit around them. And so I was seeing those, but the hiking trail was 25 miles over 3 days. You could do it 4 days if you want. And it was primarily on the beach. That's why they called it the Lost Coast, I think, because at certain points of the day, that trail is covered up by the tide. Okay. So you got the high tide coming in, and you got to stop because you're kind of, it's the water or the cliffs. And this, so you let it retreat in the low tide, and there you go on the trail. And then you find a little break in the mountains and the cliffs where there's fresh water, where there's little creek area, and that's where you set up camp for the night. But you got to take your food with you. You got to filter the water. Of course, you got to find fresh water. So
keep in mind, I'm a city boy. When you say when the tide comes in, you have to stop, and then when it goes back out, then you scurry across.
That's exactly right.
You scurry across the little space.
Oh yeah, and you're walking on sand, which isn't the easiest to hike. Yeah. You know, you're losing about 30% of your foot. You know, every time you go through. The other thing is, you got pebbles, you got bigger rocks, which are hard. So it's not the easiest trail for those thinking about going. I'd highly recommend it. You got to get a permit.
Yeah.
That was one thing that was interesting.
You got to get a permit.
You got to get a permit for some of these places.
Okay.
So, you know, at some places across the country, you go in a natural setting. If you have too many people, it can degrade the natural habitat. So this one got pretty popular, and they were trying to scale some people back to not ruin it for enjoyment for the future. Right. So that you have to apply for a permit. It's $10.
Yeah.
You sign up online, you're good to go. So, but it was pretty cool for a place like California. It's got a lot of people.
Yeah.
You get on this trail, you don't hardly see anybody, which is pretty nice. No traffic, you know. And then you see people working for the government. They're there picking up trash on the beach. You got scientists doing research on the marine habitat going on with the beach, how much land is eroding, et cetera. And then I fortunately got to see some really nice sunsets. And it reminds me of Kansas sunset, where you got the sun setting all the way down, so pretty neat.
Tell me about the Bears.
Well, so you're required to bring a bear canister. Okay, a bear canister is just like a little box that you can put your food in, your toothbrush, because they can smell your toothpaste, okay. And you put all that in a canister, and you set it out, and the bears can't get into it.
Okay.
They can play around. It's slippery. They don't have, they can't get a grip on it. They can't, you have to get it open with a little penny.
Okay.
Turn the slot sort of thing. We also brought a bear spray. So it's like pepper spray for bears, just in case, because the bear's a little bit bigger than I am, So,
just a little bit.
Yeah. We got environment to protect,
Wait. So they have a commercial on TV where a dude's in his car and the bear's out there trying to tear open a cooler. So that's kind of like what you have. You have something they can't get in?
Right. It's basically a cooler that the bears can't get into. But I never saw a bear.
Yeah, yeah.
And these bears probably aren't. Wouldn't cause any problem. They're just looking to eat,
Just looking to eat.
Yeah,
I understand. Yeah. But you saw some tracks.
Yes, every morning, we head every up morning. On the beach before the tide comes
in. While you was out there sleeping in your tent.
Yeah.
You wake up in the morning and you see bear tracks.
Right.
Oh, you got to be kidding me, man.
But,
I can't say the word I want to say on the tone.
We're all coexisting, with each other as far as people and animals,
You are coexisting with them, not all of us. Oh, yeah, that's interesting, man. This adds the thrill to it,
Right. Oh, I mean, it sends hairs up my back, what I'm thinking does. About bears being around. But at the same time, if you go swim in the ocean, there's things that could eat you in the ocean.
Yeah, but same thing.
You still want to go enjoy what nature has to offer. So.
Well, we've had a good show sitting there talking. I mean, there was so much we need to talk about. But I was nowhere in the world I wasn't going to have you have some comments to make about the trip you took. I think that, like I was saying a while ago, I mean, I know there's people who do it, but there's not a lot of conversation about it where people hear about it. And I always know that we have a future generation we still need to educate, and they get their education from hearing stories and hearing about things. You're doing what you're doing now because you've gotten inspired somewhere in life to want to do that, and you're still a young guy. I mean, for you all that didn't know that, Zach's very young. he looked like he's in college or something, so you have to take that for granted. And it's good to see someone like you that's doing that, and I will always be in a position to make sure I can explore that, to let people know that that's going on, because that's a part of life. Like you said, we have to learn to live together with these different elements, and you're actually out there doing it, I mean, you don't do no fishing. What do you do?
Oh, I love to fish. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You fish while you're out there?
I did not fish while I was out there, primarily hike.
Yeah.
But there were fish to be had. If you wanted to do fishing, you got to apply for that. Yes.
Yeah, do they have any amenities along the way?
Depends on what you're doing. I did get a bagel though before I went from the place before we went in there. But depending on what kind of activity in the outdoors you're doing, there's certain amenities, certain things that might make it a little more comfortable. So for those that don't want to get so extreme, still enjoy the places in nature that might suit your fancy.
Well, man, buddy, hey, gang, thank you. Thanks, Zach. I'd love for you to come back
Pleasure.
To us about your stories. To everybody, I'm wishing you all a happy Thanksgiving. Let's get ready for next year. It's obvious, based on what we talked about here on the air tonight, we got our hands full. Evaluate your year, the good, the bad, the ugly, and let's get ready to move into next year. And God bless you all.
All right. And Democracy Now! Will be broadcasting live from the climate talks in Bonn, Germany all week from 8 to 9 in the morning. Here's Natural E with the calendar.
Making Soil Sexy Again. This is an event hosted by the Sierra Club Thomas Hart Benton Group on November 21st. That's Tuesday, November 21st from 6:30 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. It will be at the Anita B. Gorman Discovery Center at 4750 Troost Avenue. This is an event hosted by Hillary Noonan, a longtime Sierra Club member, landscape architect, and sustainability professional. Find out more about Making Soil Sexy Again by visiting our EcoRadio Facebook page. Tomorrow, November 14th from 6:30 p.m. to 8:30 p.m., the Kansa Group, Kansas Sierra Club, and the Sustainable Sanctuary Coalition are hosting Managing Water Resources in Kansas. There'll be refreshments from 6:30 to 7, and then the program from 7 to 8:30. You also can find out more information about this event on our EcoRadio Facebook page. America Recycles Day is November 15th. It's held every year on November 15th, and it's a national campaign to raise awareness about the benefits of recycling and buying products made with recycled materials. Each year, the MARC Solid Waste Management District, in cooperation with local governments, businesses, and nonprofits, promotes this regional celebration. You can visit recyclespot.org to find out how you can recycle more. And GreenWorks in Kansas City is hosting their 10th anniversary open house. It's an ongoing event from November 29th to December 8th at the GreenWorks Classroom, which is located at 607 East 31st Street. Please join the staff and board of GreenWorks on Wednesday, November 29th or Friday, December 8th for an informal celebration of their new Midtown Classroom and also their 10-year anniversary. The events are free, but registration is encouraged. You can find out more about this event also on our Eco Radio Facebook page.
Plastic or paper? Nope. The choice is between plastic or iron. That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin. And it's This Week in Water.
The UN Climate Change Conference, known as COP23, began last week in Bonn, Germany, with the United States being represented by an unofficial group set up under a giant inflatable dome.
The U.S. representatives are unofficial because the Trump administration has threatened to pull out of the Paris Accord.
The alternative delegation is represented by 20 U.S. states, 50 of the country's largest cities, and 60 of the biggest U.S. businesses. As The Guardian reports, all of them have joined together to pledge to combat global warming.
The conference delegates are facing an extremely serious problem. Current projections are that greenhouse gas emissions will exceed the Paris Agreement targets, which scientists say will have catastrophic results.
According to James Hansen, who spoke to Deutsche Welle, the problem is that there is no substantial reduction in the use of fossil fuels. Hansen is the former top climate scientist at NASA.
He pointed out the irony that the Bonn conference is situated 50 kilometers from the largest coal mine in Europe, and that Germany still has 70 coal-fired power plants.
The Trump administration has scheduled a meeting at COP23, focusing in part on the future of coal, featuring a spokesman from Peabody Coal, to be moderated by Vice President Mike Pence.
The conference continues until November 17th.
Aging water mains and sewer lines across the U.S. will have to be replaced soon, and some estimate the cost just for drinking water systems to be at least $300 billion, and maybe as high as $1 trillion over the next 20 years, according to the American Water Works Association.
The New York Times reports that there's a major fight going on below the surface of this issue over the types of pipes to use in replacing old infrastructure.
The dispute revolves around whether to use iron or plastic pipes when upgrading systems that deliver drinking water to homes and take sewage to treatment plants.
Many municipal officials are facing this choice or will do so soon, as some pipes in the U.S. are over 100 years old.
The choice between iron and plastic is not free from politics. The conservative action group called ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, is actively involved in getting city councils to consider plastics. It is funded by the Koch brothers, who have made their billions in part from the petrochemical industry.
Generally, plastic pipes are less expensive than iron or copper. While Flint, Michigan is using copper, neighboring Burton saved more than $2 million by using plastic.
However, the Times explains that the jury is out on the safety of plastic pipes. Andrew Welton of Purdue University University said that plastics are being installed without any real understanding of their effect on drinking water.
There is no federal oversight of the materials and the processes used in making plastic pipes. Instead, the industry monitors itself. Scientists are just beginning to understand what can leach into water from underground plastic pipes.
In the interest of disclosure, American Water Works Association is an underwriter of H2O Radio.
In rural America, whether to choose iron or plastic is secondary to the question of where to get the money for replacement and repair of water systems.
Small communities of fewer than 10,000 people find it very difficult to fund infrastructure projects. For some years, the U.S. government has helped through its Rural Utilities Service, providing loans and grants of almost $14 billion in the last 8 years, benefiting almost 20 million people.
However, according to the Center for Investigative Reporting, the Trump administration now wants to eliminate that program entirely. The Obama administration's last yearly budget provided about $500 million, but Trump wants to cut it to zero.
The justification for eliminating the program is that the small community should be able to get private financing from, say, banks. But thousands of small communities do not have enough cash flow or a large enough customer base to assure a private lender that a loan would be paid back, according to the Natural Resources Defense Council.
Government loans under the Rural Utilities Service have been extremely successful with very low delinquency rates.
About 60% of the supply of the world's cocoa comes from West African nations, including Ivory Coast and Ghana. Recently, a report from an environmental organization, Mighty Earth, found that a large amount of cocoa that ends up in chocolate products made by Mars, Nestle, Hershey's, Godiva, and others has been grown illegally in protected areas.
The Guardian reports that significant areas of rainforest have been cut down and converted to cocoa monoculture. Local officials were bribed or paid kickbacks to allow the crop in protected areas.
Both Ivory Coast and Ghana have announced that they are taking steps to stop the deforestation, but their efforts need to be supported by money and sincere efforts, both from chocolate manufacturers and from food giant Cargill, which is the major cocoa broker.
Deforestation has devastating effects on wildlife and indigenous peoples. It's also been shown to significantly reduce rainfall, according to a study published in the journal Nature. And finally this week, serving water with school lunches could make kids less likely to become obese, a new study finds. According to a statement from the University of Illinois, when water dispensers were placed in New York City school cafeterias, students' consumption of water at lunchtime tripled and was associated with small but significant declines in their risks of being overweight 1 year later.
The research was done by Dr. Ru-Peng An, who projected that encouraging children to drink water at lunch could prevent more than 500,000 kids from becoming overweight or obese.
Rates of childhood obesity have more than tripled since the 1970s, and today, 1 in 5 school children is obese.
Dr. An said that while there might potentially be some problems, if children consume less whole milk, those are probably minor in comparison with the costs associated with skyrocketing childhood obesity.
That's it for This Week in Water. We'll see you next time. This Week in Water is supported by the American Water Works Association. Water quality experts will present the latest science and research in the field at WQTC in Portland, November 12th through 16th. Learn more at awwa.org/WQTC.
Thanks for listening to Eco Radio KC on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.